Really focusing today on giving you an introduction to the basics of what it's going to take to change your development methodology. So we're not going to get into a bunch of very detailed code. It's much more of a higher level overview of the fundamental differences, the things that you need to be aware of, the things that you need to consider as you start to change your development methodology to utilize MVC, some of the things to watch out for, things that may trip you up along the way. Really trying to help ease that gap a little bit. Have a few resources and things at the end as well to kind of point you to some good examples and additional resources to help make that transition within your own applications as you see fit. If you have questions along the way, by all means, please get my attention. I'll make sure to get some time to get anything that you may have a question on answered. I really want to make this more about helping you understand how and why it's beneficial to change your organization or change your development methodology into MVC if that's something that you decide to do. I want to start out and make sure to thank all of our sponsors as well. This event, you know, would not go on without them, so please make sure to, you know, reach out and talk with each of them throughout the rest of the day today. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Mitchell Sellers. I'm here from Iowa in the United States, right smack in the middle, for most of you that probably don't know exactly where that is. I run Iowa Computer Gurus. We do a lot of work with DNN, performance, security, training, development, and all other things, .NET and .NET Nuke. I'm a Microsoft MVP, DNN MVP, and ASP Insider, so I try to stay current, try to have an idea of what's going on, what trends are important, and what we what things we should be looking at as we move forward. My contact information's up here. I'll put my contact information back up here later as well. If you have questions or if there's something that you think, hey, you know what, it'd be great if you could get a blog post out about this or something like that. I'm really looking for that kind of information and feedback here as well. So what are we exactly gonna talk about today, right? Well, making the transition from web forms to MVC is something that we could have had a session that lasted all day long. Rather than doing that, I wanted to take with this session and give a real quick overview of what it's gonna take, what it means, and how that might come together for your organization making the change. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna start out by looking a little bit about web forms and what we've been doing today. What it means, what this MVC thing means, what I think it means, because a lot of this comes down to personal perception. We're gonna then move into exactly what is MVC and talk about a few of the things that you're gonna hear thrown out all of the time about different acronyms as it relates to MVC development. We're then gonna get into a brief review of what a simple form module looks like with the web forms design pattern. And what we're gonna do is we're gonna look at a very simple form that displays some inputs, has a submit button, and upon that submit, would redirect the user to another location. Okay, very, very simple form. We're then going to take a look at what we have to do with to implement things with MVC and DNN, and we're gonna actually walk through what that form that we started out with as an example would look like, at least mostly, in the MVC world. What I did with this to make sure that the code samples are something you could go back and look at later is I'm utilizing the DNN MVC samples as the basis for the MVC items. So you can go and download them from CodePlex this afternoon and look at a full working module that does exactly what we're talking through. That way, rather than trying to hand code something up here and explain all of it, I wanted to dissect and really discuss more about what and why you're doing what you're doing rather than the individual minutia of the exact characters on the screen. And then at the end, we're gonna talk about a couple party notes, some limitations and gotchas that you're gonna wanna be aware of as it comes to working with MVC and DNN, things that maybe you Googled a result for, hey, I can do this in MVC, and then you tried it in DNN and it doesn't work. We'll talk about a couple of those situations that may arise to help make sure that you try not to stumble as much. How many of you have built an MVC module in DNN already? Okay, good. That means we're gonna start off on the right foot. So there's probably only one of you here that can even throw things at me to keep me honest. I'm looking at you. All right, so web forms, MVC, why, what, how, paranoia, and panic, right? That's what we always hear. WebForms is dead, MVC is the new everything, you've got to do MVC. I still don't see that in the world that we live in today, right? WebForms is an option, MVC is an option. There are modules that I build for clients that I will tell you are night and day different building an MVC versus WebForms, and it goes both ways. Modules where we want to be really responsive to the client interface, we want them to be a rich user experience, we want them to be fast and not necessarily reload all of the pages. We want a first-class citizen to be able to build things with Knockout or Angular or React or whatever client framework you want to use. The MVC model doesn't get much better. It's easy, it's designed and built around that. But there is a certain level of rapid development that you get with web forms, and there are certain things within DNN right now that you cannot do with MVC. So number one thing is don't believe that any of the modules that you built today have to be scrapped, they have to be rewritten right away, because you're not gonna have support for web forms. I don't see that coming. It hasn't been seen in a roadmap. We're not seeing that coming out of anywhere. But what we really want to do is start looking at some of those differences, right? Web forms, as we all know it, right, makes web forms easy for us. It takes the stateless nature of the web and removes that from our discussions. The fact that each time the web request is built, the web server sees that person has never been there before because of view state and because of other things that we have today, right, we don't necessarily think about it. If you have a form with a drop-down list, what do we do in the web forms world, right? We, on page load, if it's not a postback, we fill the drop-down list. Every single time the user posts back to the server and comes back again, guess what? That list is still there. In the MVC world, that's not what happens. Each page request is truly a new request to that server, and it does not have any recollection about what was there the last time or where they came from. So from a coding perspective, you have to start thinking about your web requests a little bit more fundamentally than maybe you would otherwise. So that's one of the things where web forms is still beneficial. The biggest area and the places where I see people saying, oh my gosh, we need to go to web form or go away from web forms to MVC is when you try doing some of the more modern things. How many of you have tried to get Bootstrap styling working with using web forms controls? Okay, so those of you that haven't, if you want to, you can actually do it and it works amazingly well. But you have to find this one little bit of JavaScript and drop it on the bottom of every page, and then magic happens and it all works. But until you find that, you're never gonna have a form that's gonna look nice with Bootstrap and the existing ASP.NET web forms controls. So you can get around things, but you're finding solutions for problems that if you were doing things the MVC way, you just snap your fingers and it would be done. Client-side interactions, Angular, Knockout, React. Any of you using a client-side library such as Angular, Knockout, React? Okay. If you've started using that with web forms, you've also probably ran into some interesting things because web forms does not necessarily care for a client-side library manipulating certain values, where then when it does post back to the server, sometimes you'll get view state validation errors or other types of security mechanisms in place. So those are some of the areas where we really start to push and pull people towards making a little bit of a shift. So what is MVC at the most fundamental level, right? We all know that MVC stands for Model View Controller, but what does that really relate to for day-to-day developer operations, right? What's a good way to look at it? So the main concern here is that we're trying to separate things out. We want our view to do view things, we want our controller to do controlling things, and we want our models to do model things. Okay, so keep that in mind as we kind of talk through each of these. Our model is best likened to our data layer classes for the most part. A model is simply something that's going to be stored somewhere, right? It may be going to a database, it may be coming from a web service, it may be a flat file on your machine or something of that nature. But in the end, it is a model, it's an entity, it's some sort of data component. And with that, right, in the DNN world, we can think of that as a user could be our model. A tab could be our model. A tab module could be our model that we're working with. Basically, it's that data that we're interacting with. Your controller then is kind of the organizer of the actions. It's the actual completion of the request, wiring together, obtaining the data from the model, doing any massaging that's necessary to get it ready for the display, and then passing that information off to the view. So in there, that's something where we're getting list users. The controller would be responsible for going to the model and getting a list of users that maybe matches a certain set of input criteria. A controller action to add a user, for example, would initially display an empty input form. Once the user supplied their information, it would have a secondary action that would actually insert that user into the record. So the controller is helping to organize that. As your projects grow larger, your MVC will actually turn into being a little bit more complicated, where you're going to additionally have concepts such as a view model that's more of an aggregated combination of multiple models or something like that that's ready for the view. But the basic concept can be kept simple looking at single entities, which is what we're going to try to do today. And then the last piece, the view. The view is simply your client-side presentation. This is your HTML, your CSS, okay? Whichever way you want to do things, whether we want to use different paradigms, in the end, it doesn't matter if it's the Razor script engine or anything else, your view is your HTML, okay? Number one thing as you start transitioning from working with, working with MVC is if you find yourself in your view writing C# code that goes out and makes a database call in your view, stop, back up, and change what you're doing, okay? Because the view should only be interacting with information that's provided to it. So you provide a view a model, and that view interacts with that model and, you know, lays it out however you want, which I'll show you in a little bit. But if you find that your model's doing something different than that, if it's going and making database calls, if it's looking up information, that means your view isn't really doing what a view should be doing, with the exception of AJAX-related stuff, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. So we can talk about it all day, but then we get into this concept of you download the tutorials from DNN and you look at their contact list MVC samples. Well, you have the SPA example, you have the MVC example, and then you have, you know, an API project and something else. What gives, right? What's the difference? Where are you going with things? So all of the different names, SPA, hybrid, MVC, whatever you want to look at, we're looking at just slightly different ways of constructing things and the general interactions that users are going to take. In the MVC model, we're creating forms and views somewhat more similar to what we were doing with web forms. However, with an MVC-related setup, you can still create a single-page application. So when somebody says, oh, did you do it the SPA way or the other way, there's not a ton of difference. It comes down to convenience and hooks that are there for you, okay? A single-page application, by definition, is simply something where you look at, you load the page once, and then that page is responsible for all of the interactions afterwards, okay? It may change the URL to give you some deep linking threads back, but in the end, it's not ever going to do a full post back. It's not going to navigate the user away from one page to another. There may be JavaScript-initiated posts via AJAX. There may be a bunch of other things, but it's there. A good example of something that's close to a single-page application, granted it's a little bit, there's more to it than what the eye seems, but like Gmail or any of your webmail clients is a great example of something that's more interactive, right? Your URL always stays at, you know, mail.google.com, for example, and you can navigate through and it's updating. You're not seeing the full page refresh, it's just swapping out your messages inside the main panes, okay? So don't get too hung up when you're first starting on which way to go. I have found that when training people on getting an understanding of how to get all the way to building single page applications, that a good stepping stone, regardless, is to follow the straight MVC model, which we're gonna continue to talk about today. Okay, but just keep that in mind that when you look at it, and if you look at the samples, so the nice thing about the samples and why I like using them for this is they do perform the exact same actions. Once as an MVC module, once as a SPA-based module. So you'll be able to see the differences and compare and contrast as you work through and look through those examples. So client-side libraries. You know, I mentioned it a little bit ago, and what I'm going to tell you right now is Angular, Knockout, React, you name it. You can use it if you want, if it makes sense for your project. I am not going to talk about that today, because again, those, each of these are hours upon hours of conversation by themselves. But what it will tell you is that what you're going to see now is going to look more complicated. You're going to think you're writing, oh my gosh, I'm writing all kinds of JavaScript. It's going to be crazy. I don't know how to manage it. As you get better with MVC and then you start looking at things such as Knockout or Angular, you're going to see that you are writing a fair bit of JavaScript here and there, but it's fairly easy to manage because those libraries are going to provide you some assistance. So again, it's a bit of a stepping stone. We're going back to relearning some of the things that we learned years ago, right? How many of you, you know use on a regular basis the easy way to make our web forms controls Ajaxified, right? Update panel, true, or supports partial rendering, true. You make that change and all of a sudden it looks like you're a magical developer that can make your little piece of content update, right? As we move into the MVC route, you don't have those automatic wire-ups. The advantage of not having those automatic wire-ups is you have the ultimate control. You can do whatever you need to do. The problem is that you have to do it. Okay, so something to keep in mind as you make the transition. When you first start out, you will be slower as a developer in the MVC world, right? The first couple of MVC modules that I built took easily 3 times longer than it would have taken me to do with web forms. Some because I dealt with some weird DNN stuff, some because I dealt with some other stuff, other parts were learning along the way. So everybody's gonna be a little bit different. Have any of you built an MVC project outside of DNN? Okay, so you guys will be benefited for the most part because there's a direct translation. Almost everything that you do is the same between the two. But let's just move into getting some examples out here just to make sure we get through everything. So this is an example web forms module, the ASPX side of our control, and I've kind of cut out a couple of the fields in the beginning. I just left first name, last name, and the submit button. But one of the things that we're gonna see here is what we are used to seeing. We have somewhere a HTML tag that's ASP colon text box, ASP colon required field validator, and what we're looking at here is we're looking at a form where my view is implementing the controls, but it's also implementing my business rules, right? I have to know when I create the view that I make this a required field, or that this one should be numeric, or that this should be something, right? So our views that we have today in web forms, even if you don't look at the back end, are more than just a view, because we're introducing business logic. If I change and make something required, I have to change it at the database, right, so that we properly secure it, but then I have to change it in my C# code, right, to make sure that I'm validating that it's required, and then on top of all of that, to make it friendly for my user, I gotta make sure I have my required field validator here, okay? Now, in the DNN world, right, we don't have an individual form, right, our modules are subsets of the major form. That does not change with MVC, which is one of the important things we'll talk about in a little bit. So the very bottom, to submit my form, you know, it's your standard thing. Link button or button, whichever your preference. It has a run at server, it has text, it has your CSS classes, and it has an on-click handler registering it to the back end, right? Shouldn't be anything here that you don't recognize. So then what does our code behind look like? Well, our code behind is fairly simple, right? It's whatever our ASPX is, .cs is our code behind file. We're not going to talk about the fact that we have the designer file, right, that Visual Studio creates for us automatically. But we have two things. We have an initial page load, which in our page loads, what do? We do all of our setups. So in this case, I left a few things from here. This is actually something I pulled from an existing project just to give a real-life example of a DNN form. And so we bind any of our drop-down lists that need to be bound. We pre-fill any of the information that we need to pre-fill by mapping an object from somewhere to a text box's text property. We then, when we handle the response, we have to take all of our values out of our text boxes and put them into our models. If we had a value from the user that was maybe in a control that doesn't match our data type, right, we have to do our type conversions here. So for example, we had a drop-down list for anonymous, and you know, if the first item was selected, we set it, or we had to do an int parse to get a numeric value out of something. Right? All things that we're used to doing, lots of code that we've written on a regular basis. And then in the end, we do whatever we do, and then we do a redirect. Okay? Boom. Form was submitted, everything was happy, we do a redirect. In this case, we don't have any additional validation here, we probably should, but if we did some validation, we could simply display a, hey, you did something wrong message, and our dropdown would still have its value, and our user would still have all of the information that they provided. So, going from that, what do you have to change from what you have today to start doing this in MVC? Okay, there are project templates available, but you can also edit your existing templates. So, like me, many of you probably have your own templates that you've modified over the years. Maybe it came from Chris Hammond's templates, maybe it came from somewhere else, but I do strongly encourage you to, even if you use somebody's templates that are out there and you start with a new MVC template, make the template your own. Make sure that it works with your development process. You know, one of the number one things that I see when we get with a development firm, right, that started with DNN modules that has all kinds of errors is a company that took a template, ran with it, and never changed it. So they leave like little things in there that they shouldn't, like a business controller class that never exists. So then they get scheduler errors every time scheduler runs. You know, those kinds of things. So make the template your own. It doesn't necessarily matter. Chris Hammond's templates, he does have MVC variants for it. DNN Corp does have some MVC templates. They're kind of there, kind of not. I'll talk about that a little bit more here in a second. They are working on a couple additional templates I know that should be out soon. The biggest difference is you have to reference a new NuGet package. .NET Nuke, .web, .MVC. Okay, so if you're like me and you develop outside of a DNN installation, which I highly recommend, all you have to do is reference that. You can pull down that reference. There is some versioning information that you'll want to keep in mind. There have been some recent changes where a couple builds of this NuGet package were pulled or not published. So just make sure to check to make sure you have the version that you're expecting that you have when you're building your MVC projects. My understanding is that all of those version issues will also be taken care of here within the next week or so. Just something to kind of be aware of. The biggest then difference is your modules will have your views, you'll have your controllers, you'll have your standard MVC stuff. So if you've done an MVC project, that's all gonna look familiar. The difference is with DNN, because we're running inside of the URL rewrite functionality, we're running inside of all of the DNN things, we have one additional piece that we have to add to our project, and that's a route mapper. The route mapper is what we're going to use to tell DNN, in addition to all of your other friendly URLs, when these URLs show up, we need you to point this to our code so that everything works the way that we want it to work. Okay? That is one of the biggest differences between what you would see with a regular MVC project and what you see with DNN. Because a regular MVC project, you have default routing that's there. And if you build a basic project, most of the time you don't have to build your own routes. So if you forget this step, your MVC module will fail. It will fail with a very weird error message, but it will still install correctly. So I always recommend to people, start with your route mapper. If you start with the route mapper, you know that you started your project on the right foot, and then you can move forward. Because once you touch it, once you build it, you don't usually have to go back to it. So what does this look like? A route mapper is simply a class that you create that inherits from the iMVC route mapper. This is part of the reference assemblies that come in with the .NET Nuke.web.MVC. And you simply create a public void register routes, which brings in the map routes, and you map an additional route. The special pieces here from a DNN perspective, you give it a module name, and you give it an API endpoint. So what this is going to do, in this case, contact list, is identifying that it's for the contact list module, which ties it back to the location that it's going to go look for the views. And it's going to give it a URL endpoint format that is contact list. It's going to have a standard URL format of controller/action. And then the last piece here is one of the DNN specific things. So the way that DNN does all of its discovery is using a service locator pattern rather than a regular true dependency injection scenario. So what we need to do is we need to also tell this route, here are the namespaces that I have my controllers in that are associated with this route. So in this case, we define the contact list route, and then we say it's in dnn-contact-list.mvc.controllers. So then any controller inside of that namespace will be associated and will be accessible via that route. Okay? If you have multiples, this is an array of namespaces. So you can simply add as many as you need here to get you going. Okay? Again, this is the full sample out of DNN so that you can lift and bring this stuff along. So we define this route and we kind of stick it in the corner. Where you stick it in your project file, some people put it in the root, some people put it elsewhere. The exact placement doesn't matter. It's just a CS file that needs to exist in your project. The next piece is we define our model. And when we look at our model, our models could be our Petapoco objects. They could be a custom object that we create and we fill from the Petapoco entities, or if you're using Entity Framework or anything else. But the key here is that we can decorate our models with things such as required specific data types. By doing so, when we pass these through later to our views, this information is going to be used by MVC to render validators for us so that we can make sure that our forms are ready to go and they're driven by this model. So in this case, with our model, we say required and empty strings aren't valid, email address, et cetera. So we can use the data annotations just like you would in an MVC project to decorate these models and get them working as you desire. The next step then is to define a controller. And what we're looking to do is in here, we're going to just simply say we're editing a record. So in the MVC world, we have to process our actions just as the browser would process them. So to allow a user to edit something, first they have to request to edit the entity. So that would be an HTTP GET, where they simply had typed in a URL or clicked a link to edit something. So that's what we have in our controller here as our first action. We have an HTTP GET attribute tagged method that has a contact ID parameter, and that parameter has a value defaulted of -1. So that way, if we wanted to add something, we could use this same action. We then obtain the model. How you do this, completely independent, okay? If you get it from Entity Framework, you get it from another data storage mechanism, a third-party web service, doesn't matter. In the end, we return view, and then we pass it our model. And what we're doing at this time is we're returning a view and giving it a data entity. We're not giving a view name. So I'm not saying, hey, I want you to render view.cshtml. I'm just saying render view. When you do the return view, it is going to look automatically for a view with the name of the method that you're in. So in the case of being in edit, it's going to look for edit.cshtml. It's going to look for that inside of your particular controllers folder in the views. It's also going to look for any shared views that match that same name. If you mess up this part and you don't have a view that matches, the error message that you get is actually very, very friendly and says, hey, I was looking for this, and I looked in these locations. So it gives you a pretty good indication of where something might go wrong. Okay? The other piece, and the only The only really special thing that we have in this controller as well that's different from MVC is in MVC, you have the handle error attribute that tells ASP.NET to handle the errors for you. In the case of a DNN API definition, you have the DNN handle error attribute. That is basically the DNN equivalent to make sure that errors and exceptions get properly recorded in the event log so that you can come back and look at them later and handle them should a situation arise. Okay? So the GET grabs our data, prepares anything that's necessary for the user, and submits the and renders the form for them. We then have the same method name. So we have edit. But this time, I have it as an HTTP post. So that means it's only going to work if they've posted information to me. And now, instead of taking the contact ID as an integer, I'm actually taking my model as the parameter. Now, this is where the magic of MVC happens. So obtaining the values from the text boxes, the drop-down lists, converting them to their proper data types, all of that happens for you automatically as part of the binding associations that you get with MVC. And now, all that we have to do is we simply say, if model state is valid. So if the model that we received is valid, this is the server-side secondary check. Did the required fields become required? Did the phone number become a proper format? Is an email address a proper format? If that is true, do whatever you need to do. Fire off the email, save it in the database, do whatever. And then you can simply return a redirect. Right? This could be a .NET Nuke response redirect, navigate URL. It could be redirect to another action inside of your controller. It doesn't really matter. But basically, we're done. Everything was good. If it failed, we simply return the view with the model. So if a user turned off JavaScript, for example, and somehow managed to submit your form, this would result in a failure here if they were missing fields. The error messages would be persisted with your model, and when the view renders, it would actually display error messages for the user automatically. Okay, so no more of this boilerplate. We're no longer shuffling text values from the view into our models. It's just happening automatically for us. Okay, this makes it pretty easy, but we had to think about what we were doing in terms of when they want to start an edit, it works one way. When they post an edit back to me, I have to look at it another way. Okay, so that's where we start to get that little bit of a paradigm change. The other piece that's here that's a little bit different from a non-DNN implementation of MVC is our second attribute that's here. It's a really, really long namespace to get to it, but it's validate anti-forgery token. But it's in a DNN namespace, not an MVC namespace. What that is doing is it's doing the same thing that the anti-forgery token validation is doing in MVC, which is every page in DNN is automatically rendered with an anti-forgery token. So all you're doing here is attesting that you want it to validate that anti-forgery token. Okay? From a cross-site scripting perspective, this is what prevents somebody from using a cross-site scripting attack to post to your form with information from somewhere else. Okay? On your post methods, it is recommended that you do it this way. For those of you that have done MVC projects, you probably do what I do and create a custom filter that just makes that mandatory for all posts. We can't do that with DNN because that'd be a little dangerous, right? What if another module vendor didn't do that? So it's something you do have to declare and opt into here, but I strongly, strongly recommend that you do that for anything that manipulates data, whether it is an insert or delete or update, you really should be validating that anti-forgery token at minimum to make sure that you're not getting malicious users manipulating things that they shouldn't. So, controllers, pretty simple, right? Grab the data, shoot off to the view, grab the data that the view submitted. If it was valid, shoot it off to the database. If not, give it back to the view, right? All we're doing is controlling the situation. So what's our view look like? Our view which in this case we place in our views contact folder. We have at the very top an inheritance that says it inherits a .NET Nuke framework DNN web view page. It's very important that you don't try to inherit from an MVC-based view class here. You'll get into some trouble if you do that. But basically, we're then telling it that the model that we're expecting is dnn.contactlist.api.contact, which happens to be the same namespace of the model object that we are passing to it from the prior config. We have two additional usings that we're doing here. I recommend in most cases for your projects, if you're needing to consider localization or anything like that, you're going to need at least the first one here. So we're using .NET Nuke.Services.Localization. This gives us, in our view, the ability to get to the DNN localization context information. And then we have some DNN-specific MVC helpers that we can get to. Otherwise, the rest of our layout here looks an awful lot like what we have in a run-of-the-mill MVC project. So instead of having a bunch of things where we have, you know, ASP, text box, et cetera, we're using the Razor syntax, HTML text box for model first name. And then we have HTML validation message for our first name, and then we have a DNN localized string to actually bring in the error message. Okay, in this case, it's going to render whatever validation is necessary based on the attributes that are associated to it, just like you get with MVC. So I can put the validation message for even on a field that isn't required, because if it's not declared as required in the model, there's no error message to be displayed. So it makes it so you can continue to build and scaffold and rapidly deploy your scenarios. You can also use HTML editor for over text box if you want to let it do the dynamic editor type configuration for you. We then have at the very bottom our submit button, which in this case is just a regular button, and we have our CSS class and we have our localized string. Localization, when you work with MVC, is simply tied to the controller. So if we're in a contacts controller, we simply create contacts.resx inside of our app local resources, and then everything can be combined in there. So from a resource file management perspective, it's going to help you a little bit when you have five different views. You don't have to create five different ASCXs to store all of your localization strings in there. Okay? If you don't want to do the DNN localization for whatever reason, which most of you guys here probably are very heavy into getting that done, makes it pretty easy. Okay, so from a Razor perspective, not much is different than what you see anywhere else with one exception. We're missing something. In every MVC view that you've ever seen for non-DNN implementations, you'd see a begin form call, right, to render your HTML form. That is not done in DNN MVC because of the fact that you're already inside of an HTML form. So the limitation that exists with DNN, because of the way that everything's put together where you can't have a form tag inside of your content, is still something you have to consider. If you put a form in here, your results are going to vary in terms of what happens. The page may become uneditable. You may be able to get in there and delete the module. You may get an error message. It really depends. I've seen a couple different scenarios. But what we have to remember here is we are still rendering our MVC content inside of the context of the overall DNN structure. Okay? The other thing you have to remember here is if you're building a module and you're assigning it neat IDs, right? If you are building a list of hyperlinks and you're giving them unique IDs, make sure whatever you're using to build those IDs is truly unique. Don't, for example, give a first name label an ID of only first name without putting something behind it, because what can happen is, what happens if a user drops your same module on the page twice? Right? You do still have to make sure that you manage some of the aspects that we are still in a dynamic content management system. life can change. Users can do things that we don't expect them to do, okay? So all fine and dandy, right? We created a view, we created a controller, it orchestrates things. But now we have our DNN manifest. How does that work, right? Our DNN manifest, normally we put all of our modules under the desktop modules folder. If you put an MVC module just under the desktop modules folder, nothing's going to work. You're going to get a failure saying that it was actually looking for your module code in desktop modules slash MVC slash whatever your modules folder path is. So the first thing you have to change from your standard DNN packaging is that your resource files, all of those things that is bundled for you automatically when you do your compilation, needs to go to desktop modules MVC and then whatever it is that your module is working with. I strongly recommend following the pattern that's here, which is nest the things for your company underneath its own folder. As in this case, right, this is a DNN sample project, so it's DNN slash contact list. But in the end, you have to make sure your files are placed in this new directory, okay? The secondary change then is your control definitions. A couple things you're going to notice. At the very top, your module name, you can still make that whatever you want it to be. Your folder name is still simply your component. It is not the MVC prefix. Okay, the reason why this is important is, technically speaking, I'm not necessarily recommending this practice, but you can have a DNN module where you would mix MVC and web forms between different views. Okay, not a good idea, but it is supported by the platform, okay? Because what happens is it's all in your individual controls as to where it gets it from. In the case of our control SRC, we're used to putting in here desktop modules slash our company slash module name slash view.ascx. Well, what we're doing now is we're actually putting in the namespace of our controller, so in this case, DNN contact list MVC controllers, and then our action and our controller and our action, so contact index. This is telling it which view we're looking to go after, which action we're executing. Okay, so in the case of our edit, it would be a edit.mvc. Okay, the SPA method changes this ever so slightly to where in a SPA situation, it's .html, okay? So one of the things you can look at is the differences. Other than that, everything else is the same, but don't check supports partial rendering. You can still select supports partial rendering, but it results in some very interesting behavior, so you want to make sure that you set that to false in any of your MVC views to make sure that everything continues to work appropriately, at least from what I've seen so far. So with that, if you need to do more, right? If you need to be able to call something via AJAX, you can add additional methods to your controller that don't necessarily tie directly to a view response. So further in the downloadable example, we have a method defined in our controller that's simply public JSON result, get JSON result, and it just simply spits back the user ID, the portal ID, the current portal alias, and the time, right? Just to kind of show that it can happen. And we return that as a JSON result, and we can call that using this lovely block of JavaScript over here on the left. The key here is that these APIs are expecting module context information. So when we construct our request, we're adding headers. So we can see that our URL matches what we were expecting with desktop modules, MVC, contact list, contact, get JSON result, right? So it matches what we defined in our route, but then we also pass it the module ID and the tab ID. So what does that mean? Well, we have to make sure that when we're rendering our Razor view, we grab those values out of portal settings so that we have them client-side. Okay? So don't forget some of that information as you're going to submit your information back. And you'll also notice that we are putting in the request validation code as part of that. All right. So with that, one of the last notes I have here is if you're a person that likes to build a module, look at it and play with it, and then use that little develop feature. So you click on, in edit mode, you choose from the little settings dropdown, develop. That does not work with current version DNN. There's a pull request in to take care of it, but it results in a critical error, and then you have to kind of navigate back. So be aware of that. The other thing is, there's currently no solution for utilizing the DNN rich text editor. So as an MVC view right now, there's no at least clean way that I've seen to get the rich text editor with all of the DNN specific features, right? Folder browser and all of that working in an MVC module. Now, that may change. Somebody maybe came up with a really creative workaround that I haven't seen yet. But as far as I know, that is something that is still outstanding. Yeah. So help icons on the labels, that would be another. So any of those things that are a user control that we've been using, so the rich text editor, the label control, et cetera, right now there's not a clean way to utilize those in the MVC manner. So yeah, the dual list, unless, Dana, do you, if you have something, I'd love to hear it. Okay. Okay, you iframed that. Yeah, that was the only way that I had seen so far was basically to iframe a control, which would work for a rich text editor. I don't know a good hack at all for like the label control or the dual list control. Those are the two most common ones. We can talk about that a little bit more here as well. So helpful resources. There's two things that I thought were really good that I wanted to share in terms of online resources to get you guys thinking. There's a very nice detailed tutorial from Microsoft about transitioning from web forms to web API. It actually kind of walks you through just like what we did with yet another example of this is the way we had done it before. We take these five steps and now we're doing it the new way. And then we also have the DNN sample modules. Those are the ones from DNN Corp. They are updated on a very regular basis. There's probably been at least 40 or 50 commits to them. You can pull them down, compile them, look at them. They're the ones you'll have to watch that dependency for MVC along the way. But with that, I guess, any questions? Yeah?
I don't quite get how we should create unique, like, first name fields that would stay unique, even if I entered
the module at the same time. The only unique way that I know to do it right now would be to tack on the module ID. I hate it. Well, DNN takes care of the control. So HTML editor 4 or HTML text box 4 takes care of it. I'm more talking about the things that aren't auto-generated for you. So what I've seen people do is like a contact form where there's a div that's just a hard-coded div that has an ID, and then you end up having two divs with the same ID if they drop the module on twice. Some people work around it by just simply saying, hey, we don't support two modules on the page. And that's a viable solution in some cases as well. But those are the scenarios I'm trying to work from.
The other thing I haven't figured out is how the actual wiring should work. Again, if you have multiple modules on a page, how should I know which one was at the button
press? I'll come back to that one in a second. I got an idea on that, but I'm not sure. So module settings, pop-ups, and things like that. So module settings, you can declare an MVC view as a module setting, and it just works. Same rule, control key of settings. And so in terms of pop-ups for like one of your actions, that I don't know. I have not played with that yet. I think you can because it's still a module action collection. But I have not tried turning that link on, I guess. That I'm not 100% sure. But to your question, Danielle, around two modules on the page and they both submit, right now, I actually don't believe there is a very good solution aside from trying to drop some payload of your own into a JavaScript field, if there's two, because the whole form does still go if you're letting DNN do it. Where I'm seeing the people that are doing the really fancy things, you end up using your own knockout model and managing it yourself or your own Angular module. That's what at least I've seen so far. Yeah, I found that there's a nice hybrid approach. So the problem that Daniel's talking about here is, you know, DNN, we have our concept of multiple modules on a page. So you drop two modules on the same page. The way that DNN's handled it today is there's unique IDs for everything, right? The submit button for this bottom module is DNN underscore module ID underscore button click. So then we know, oh, that was the one that triggered my event. I know the controls associated with it. Well, with MVC, some of that goes away because, again, we don't have that state tracking. So there's not a way, if you have two of the same module on the same page, you don't know which one gets clicked. And there's some really weird behaviors a lot of times that's happened with that. So one of the ways you get around it is going and using things like Angular or Knockout or React to help basically avoid all of that. You don't use DNN to do the routing. The benefit that I find with staying with MVC, though, in those scenarios, is you can leverage with the MVC the ability to render a partial. So I can make an AJAX call using Angular or whatever to my API, and I'll get back a partial view, which will return full HTML for me that was Razor scripted. That's the only real reason. But yeah, I see a lot of people either breaking the page mold for the stuff that's really critical. That's what you see a couple of the big module vendors do, where all of your DNN stuff goes away and they just have their own little page and you get it back to DNN, because then they get rid of any chance that somebody would muck with things. Or you have to start getting creative with React. So I think I gotta let things go. If there's other questions, by all means, I'm around and available. Hope it was helpful. Thanks, guys.